Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're rooting, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday early evening. Hope everybody's doing okay. Okay in their normal lives, obviously. But as a boxing fan, man, almighty, golly, man, just getting the news not long ago that Errol Spence Jr. was diagnosed with a torn retina in the lead up, you know, the health inspection on it. Well, health inspection. Yeah, I mean, it kind of is that, right? But obviously, you feel for him, you know? So a torn retina, you wonder, like, did that happen in sparring then? Thank God they found it. Did it happen, has he had it for a little bit? You know what? All these things kind of go through my head. Did it happen in the Garcia fight and they just missed it in the post-op? He will be having an operation on that eye, I believe, tomorrow. Flying back to Texas. It just sucks, man. You know, first and foremost, I do want to say I really hope that we see, you know, Spence come back stronger than ever off of this injury. Because, you know, who knows how serious, you know, how torn it was. You know, we're going to find out a little bit more information at some point here. But, man, that's scary. That's scary. I mean, obviously, if this was 25, 30, 40 years ago, it'd be that much more scary, right? We've seen some fighters come back from it after Mares came back from it just offhand. But, yeah, you never know. So you hope the best, you know, for Spence. On the flip side of that, the replacement opponent is your Dennis Ugas. And as a boxing fan, like I said, I feel bad for Spence. I hope he recovers. But looking at it from the Ugas side, you know, he's been calling for a big, big fight. He's definitely deserved a big, big fight. You know, he got that Porter fight where probably could have been a draw. I did feel like both of the fighters kind of left something in the ring that night. I thought they both could have performed a little better. But either way, Ugas has been looking for a big fight. He thought he had the Spence fight lined up until the Pacquiao-Spence fight got made, and here we are. You know, this is the world of boxing. So I'm really happy for Ugas. You know what I mean? I'm very happy for Ugas. Ugas, still a solid fight. I mean, if they would have, you know, let's say they would have said, well, you know, Pac wants one more, you know, wants a fight because he's been off for over 2 years and he fought Ugas. I think that would be a pretty damn good fight. I'll say that. But it just sucks. There's just no way around it. If you, you know, March was very good month for boxing. April was better than expected, or at least on paper. May and parts of June were phenomenal. And then, you know, we had some good action. I mean, we had a very competitive fight with Castaño and Charlo in July, but obviously the buzzkill, it just kind of wanted it to happen with the trilogy, you know, with Fury and Wilder, to kind of just get that done with, in a sense. You know, no matter who wins, it would have been right? And so we figured, okay, well, the next couple of weeks, we're trying to get through it, yada, yada, yada. And here we are, not even 2 weeks away from what was a big, big fight that so many people were excited about. The casuals were involved in this one. The ticket sales were doing damn good. It just sucks, man. There's just really no way around it. And, you know, it seems like boxing has just come to a halt, you know, these last, what, month or so. Don't get me wrong. This weekend, Rigondeaux, Casamayor, Virgil Ortiz against Kavalauskas, Franco Maloney, the trilogy, Buatsi. It's Buatsi, right? That's how you say that. He's back in the ring. So it's actually a jam-packed weekend, right? There's no doubt about that. But, man, what a buzzkill. And like I said, the momentum we had going, it was popping, man. Like I said, March, April, May, into June, it was like, okay, dude, and now we're going to have a hot summer. And both the two biggest fights on paper, one postponed, one, who knows? It really matters. I think it kind of matters. Well, it kind of matters with Spence, obviously, how long, you know, rehab going to take him after the surgery, knock on wood, that it goes well. You know, we don't know where Pacquiao's at. You know, some are saying this is his last fight. The recent word is this isn't his last fight. A lot of people think he's going to run for president in 2022. I think a lot of people just assume, oh, he's going to win. The dude in charge is a gangster. I'll just put it that way. He don't like gangsters and drug dealers, right? He'll go up and shoot them on spot for just dealing drugs in the Philippines, which I don't mean to laugh, but that's just ridiculous. But he's not going to be too easy his regime is not going to be easy to just overtake. So could we see Spence be able to fight in, say, January? Because for a while there, January and in July, August was kind of when, you know, Pacquiao has fought these last few years. I think he fought Matisse. Now I think about it. I think that was actually July. Maybe that was August. I can't remember, but so maybe January, February? Maybe not, though. Maybe Pacquiao, you know, will be done. It's tough to say. It's totally up to him, obviously. But, yeah, that's a shitty way to start the show. I was literally just talking to someone about the fight and some plans of watching it, yada, yada, yada. Hang up the phone. Get a text message, get another one, not really paying attention to it for a second. See on boxing, or no, I think it was on Twitter, bam, Spence, what? Go to boxing scene, what? Read the text, it's like, are you kidding me? And like I said, from a selfish standpoint, you know, I hope Spence is okay, but man, what a buzzkill the end of July and into this, you know, Spence and Pacquiao fight now, man. That's rough, dude. That just sucks, man. Oh, man. And then, you know, the buzzkill of Canelo Alvarez and Plant not happening. And then we find out Canelo's not even going to fight on Mexican Independence Weekend. We got a little update news on that. But, man, that's a rough one, dude. That's a rough one. I was really going to start the show talking about what will probably be the robbery of the year. Unfortunately, it took place right here in my neck of the woods in Minneapolis. Mindianapolis, a lot of people say it. Yeah, you ever go to Indianapolis or Mindianapolis? How do you say that? It's Minneapolis. Anyway, golly, Michael Fox just got robbed in broad daylight. I mean, he was on Fox, right? So it was on national TV, just got robbed. So you think, all right, that was a shitty decision. Just a horrible decision. Clearly Fox won, right? So that's bad enough. Then you see some more information coming out about one of the judges, especially one of those just horrendous scorecard judges, right? You find out that person's on Twitter, not just ignorance, but straight up racist. So did he ever really have, you know, a chance to win that fight beyond just knocking him out? Nope. And it's not like Fox. Well, let's not even go there, because you can't be relied upon or dependent upon, I should say, to stop somebody, and that's the only way you're going to win a fight. But, you know, there's some sort of tie there as well, not just the judge being ignorant and racist on Twitter. I think that person has canceled, or, well, I guess they've been canceled. No, for good reason, though, right? But I think they shut down their Twitter. They deleted their Twitter account, but wow, dude. They better order that rematch. I don't know if it's officially been, you know, ordered. It sounds like they're gonna do it. They're gonna, you know, order that. It's just like, damn, were you trying to get that dude to fight in Minneapolis against Jamal James, like, for his next fight too? Was it just like you just had to do it? I mean, that was, like I said, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough to top that, Rob. Anyway, we will talk a little bit about last weekend, a variety of fights that we'll go over. Kid Galahan, by the way, looked damn good. Ebony Bridges calling out for a rematch. Like I said, PBC on Fox. The main event actually looked like it was going to be a fun, just good TV fight. The crowd actually who had kind of been dead, and that's saying something at the Armory. Usually you hear the Armory crowd, but the first two fights just didn't have a lot of action. The second fight didn't have a lot of two-way action, or at least that's what we thought sitting at home. But yeah, we'll talk all about that. But like I said, the main event got cut short, unfortunately. It did look like it was going to be at least a fun fight to watch, but yeah, definitely a bummer. This year, it's just stop and start. Hurry up and wait. It's like we're filming a movie, right? Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. All right, we're going to wait. We're going to shoot in 90 minutes. You know, like it's just this run of, oh, that fight's off. Oh, that actually is happening. When are they going to announce that fight? Cancellation, postponement, just, oh, man. And this is a prime, one of the many, but a prime reason, whatever, top five or whatever, why networks. And at times you got to give ESPN credit, right? Obviously Showtime, a whole bunch of credit. But, and also Fox, they really know how to promote their fights. We definitely have given them a whole lot of, you know, credit for how they promote fights, and they'll run commercials way out, right? But this is a prime example of why boxing is a tough sell for, you know, one network to just go all in because of these postponements. And you just don't know. It's an individual sport. It's not a team sport. You don't really have many tournaments. The show must go on, but wow. You know, I mean, sure, Ugas is going to be cheaper than Spence, right? But it just sucks, dude. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, the COVID thing, you know, if now that we know Tyson Fury's camp and the lack of any kind of protocol in his camp, there is no excuse for that. I know Tyson Fury fans didn't like me saying that. I'm a Tyson Fury fan, but I'm not a fanboy, right? And that was ridiculous when you found out that sparring partners were coming into camp without getting tested and bringing their buddies. You know what I mean? Like, what? Huh? But it's frustrating. That's frustrating in general. But man, oh my. Damn, dude. Damn. This one sucks, man. And obviously, you know, what are you going to get mad at, you know, Spence for tearing his retina? Thank God they caught the damn thing, because you don't want to go into any kind of fight with that. You don't want to go in with that kind of injury, but you especially don't want to go in there, you know, there with a lightning quick Manny Pacquiao. That's just for sure, you know, in the accuracy of him. So let's hope that he makes a full recovery. But like I said, we will do some recap. You know, it's actually been what, a week now? Yeah, because I think it was last Tuesday with that versus card, or the Triller card, which, by the way, the difference on this one, a couple differences, because it was still musical acts, but we'll get into that. It's not like the fights were great by any stretch of the imagination. You know, Algieri looked good. You know, the main event wasn't going to be much, and it wasn't besides the good-ass knockout by Hunter. But the locks and Dipset on Versus, you know, like I said, I was into it. I said when I did the show before I went out of town on Sunday that I was into this. This one actually does attract me to it, and it's not on pay-per-view because let's be honest, none of those fights deserve to be on any kind of pay-per-view. So, but that was dope. So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to preview and predict a busy, busy fight weekend. Rigan Diao with Casimiro, Virgil Ortiz, who looked, I'm not going to say shaky, I'm not going to say horrible. I see a lot of people were ripping him, you know, from his last fight. And he didn't look himself. He didn't look at his top-notch self, I guess you could say. He did look a little, like I said, I'm not going to say shaky, but he didn't look his best. So what I want to see what he looks like this time around against Kavalaskis, the mean machine, who gave a pretty decent fight to, you know, Bud Crawford, Terrence Crawford. Did knock him down, even though it didn't count, but he knocked him down. So I want to see how he performs on this one. So we're going to break this stuff down. Like I mentioned, Franco and Maloney, too, the trilogy on ESPN. So there is a fair amount of items to get to when it comes to this. Obviously, we'll talk a little current fight news as well. Won't be a three-hour show today. Like I said, I was gonna do a show yesterday, but life got in the way, so I'm just kind of trying to fit this in. Anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope if you don't want to and download the show there or listen to the browser. You can find the platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, a whole lot of different places. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a lot of places as well. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or, you know, you have and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. That name, like it did about, what, a year, year and a half ago, is going to change again. It's going to be DirecTV Stream. By the way, I think that's the name. Anyway, AT&T TV plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device. The cloud DVR is available. And if you sign up for the choice package or above, you get a free year of HBO Max. That's AT&T TV. Like I said, soon to be. I think it's literally at the end of this month. I haven't got the exact date yet, but a DirecTV stream. So yeah, but you know, I kind of already, you know, went with it sucks. You know, shit happens. Like I said, this is something in boxing. It, you know, if a player's out in other sports, you know, it can maybe hurt the rating minorly, but not majorly. You know what I mean? Unless it's like two very famous quarterbacks that are very popular and one of them doesn't play in the game. Sure, that would affect the rating, but either way, the NFL is so strong. In the end, it doesn't matter. And it still happens. You still have a season, blah, 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 right? You're still going to have the Super Bowl. I don't know if this thing is going to ever be made again. And I'm talking, of course, of the Spence Pacquiao fight, but, man, that's just a bad, bad news. Summer, July on, man. And both of them are like 2 weeks out. You know, the Fury, now that I think about it, yeah. The Fury and Wilder were like two weeks out, and now this one's less than 2 weeks out. I say, man almighty. You know, I haven't heard anything about you can turn in your tickets or anything like that. And I wonder what they're going to do here, because what I do know is, of course, Manny, no matter who he fights, is going to sell, especially at the MGM and you know, in Vegas and the T-Mobile. But The same with Spence in Dallas, right? But those tickets were fucking spendy. So if they don't offer a rebate in there somewhere, wow, that would suck. That would really suck. I'm assuming they will. Maybe we'll get some more information before I'm out of here, but it would suck to pay those kind of prices to see, you know, not the fight you wanted to see. Like I said, Ugas has a late, like a 10-day, what is it, 10, 12-day replacement. It's a solid replacement. Ugas is a solid guy. Really happy for Ugas for getting this opportunity. He's been calling for a big fight ever since he got that winning streak going, and some people thought he, you know, fought well enough to beat Porter. Beat Porter then. I would have been okay with a draw, to be honest with you, on that one. But, man almighty, dude. That just sucks, man. That just sucks. But anyway, the show must go on. And, I mean, the main event for PBC on Fox, I was kind of looking forward to that fight as just another fight. Like, hey, when I say looking forward, I don't mean like, of course we knew Collazo didn't have much in the tank, but I actually thought he had like the second round, for instance, that was a fun round, you know, Collazo would kind of mix in the busy work and then, you know, mix in a few decent lands within that busy work. He's normally game, you know what I mean? But Stanonius, you know, he actually had some heavy-ass body work from the jump. He was working the head and body with hooks. But, you know, even the third round was at least competitive, like I mentioned. But hooks with both hands by Stanonius, he started adding the uppercut to his offensive display that was going on. And then the fourth round comes around, and there's a clash of heads. And, you know, a lot of people thought Collazo was just like, I'm going to get out of here with a paycheck and just leave. You know what I mean? And I'm not this hurt. But it's tough to say, man. I mean, that guy's been in a lot of wars. I'm not going to sit here and call him out and say, oh, he could have finished, you know. I don't really know how he's feeling. You know, I don't know how hard. He did hit his head very hard. That head clash was really hard. So, when you look at the cut, yeah, we've seen worse, right? And people have fought with it and whatnot. But I think if you look at more of the actual head clash and what that did to him, you know, maybe it did affect him to that point, you know? Maybe not, though. I mean, I can't sit there and bullshit you either because, you know, when there was contact, it was kind of a delayed, almost like, and I'm not saying he flopped, okay, but it was kind of like, I can understand why people thought he kind of flopped. It's one thing to, you know, go on the ground and whatnot, because you know you got 5 minutes, you know, but that one's in between. It's a tough one to call, because I can understand, especially looking at the replay, he did, you know, the contact happened, the heads clashed, accidental headbutt. If anything, it was Collazo kind of leading into it. But it happens all the time, right? Not every fight, but a lot of fights, accidental headbutts or straight-up head clashes that someone's leading on the way inside with their head, whatever. But like I said, it was kind of a delayed reaction. I mean, another thing you got to think about is when you're looking at it in slow motion, you know? So that delayed reaction can look that much more delayed, right? So I guess it just sucked. It was like, dude, because that was kind of a fun fight because otherwise there wasn't a lot of two-way action, although that one judge thought it was. But, I mean, I don't know. It was just a bummer. It was a bummer that Collazo's last fight, if in fact that is his last fight, goes out like that. And like I said, it was a fun fight to watch, just a TV fight, you know, like it was like, okay, Casimore. Castaño's, you know, did I just do that? I did that tonight. Collazo. I mean, like I said, I thought he was doing some good work. He was making large enough portions of the round competitive that it was interesting, you know, and I still thought there'd be something there to watch, but, you know, that obviously didn't happen. So, you know how I said earlier with Jamal James, were they trying to get Maestre interim trinket type WBA special title to then fight Stanonius next, or was it Jamal James after that? You know, I wonder, because they put him on the same card. You know, I don't know. It just seems shaky. But anyway, well, before I get into the robbery, Alexander came back against Santa Maria. You know, Alexander a couple years ago looked washed, right? And he didn't look that much. He looked pretty bad. Didn't they have to change the weight too? I think they had to change the weight. I think they made it 154, but they had to like redo the contract to 154. But Alexander was either missed weight or was gonna miss weight, one of the two. And smart on Santa Maria though. I mean, he got the win. He won a competitive fight. I'm not saying it wasn't, you know, it was just slow, to be honest with you. It was just really slow. Maybe Alexander, you know, I gave him the first round. He landed a few jabs, maybe the late land that Santa Maria had. Maybe that stole the round. Second round, to me, there was like a nice left hook by Alexander, but I think there was two or three clean right hands by Santa Maria, and that was enough to win the round for me anyway. Third round, you know, I think Santa Maria had the body work, but competitive. It was competitive. It was a close round, I'd say. There's a few nice lands by Alexander. Alexander just got into this. He just fought basically at the same pace the whole time, and it wasn't necessarily a good one. Whereas Santa Maria, you know, of what we've seen of him late coming into this fight, I actually liked how he mixed up his whole game plan. So I actually thought he was moving pretty decently and using some of the ring and not just going in there to try to, you know, terrorize him and try to, you know, knock him out or whatever. Fifth round was really slow. You could give that one to Alexander. The eighth round, you know, I thought Alexander finally was, like, giving us good head movement with some offense in that round. But overall, you know, three or four, like in the sixth round, three or four clean right hands again and then a nice uppercut. You know, it was like he was just doing enough to get it done. I had it like 6-4, 7-3, something like that. I had it 6-4, though, for Santa Maria. I couldn't really see a draw, to be honest with you. Two scorecards had it 98-92, and one had it 97-93. I definitely closer to 7-3 than I am any kind of draw or even 5-4-1 or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was just the fight. There was just something missing in the fight. It just, you know, a good performance, sturdy performance by Santa Maria. Like I said, he did show me something else, which I can appreciate. You know, he did use distance pretty well, and so he kind of made Alexander the come-forward fighter for a lot of that fight, and he wasn't comfortable with that. And like I said, he was already washed, you know what I mean? So even in the fight that he got stopped in, he was still looking a lot better than he did that night. He's done. But a good win, though, by Santa Maria. Like I said, I'm happy. Now he's had, you know, some good performances kind of out of nowhere, you know what I mean? So that's good for him. I like that. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, when you look at this Michael Fox and Maestre, was it Maestre? I mean, Goosen was actually talking about he termed it the skin job on his gloves even before the fight started. And, you know, the first round was competitive. I actually gave Maestre that one. I thought he landed a few bigger shots. You know, a couple body punches is actually what won him that round. But there's really not many you can do past that. I mean, I'm not saying that you can't give him, you know, something, but, I mean, you can't give him much, I'll tell you that. Second round, just a flush, clean left hook. By Fox, dropped him, so it was a 10-8 round. You know, I'll say this, Maestro did get up and had some moments in that round, but Fox kind of, you know, was just jabbing him to death, you know. You had Maestro trying to pressure, but it was kind of like stale pressure, just there wasn't much to it, and he wasn't able to really get off that much. And it was just kind of stick and move, little body work here and there, just a sharp jab, and he would counter with his left hand or right hand. You know, he'd counter as well, and he basically just handled the fight. It was pretty easy to score. Now, the sixth round and the seventh round, you know, Maestre, now you can, you know, I thought the body work in the sixth was good enough to give him that round. It was a very tight seventh round. Could you give him that? Maybe. But then it seemed like Fox just got back on his jab. Going, you know, solid-ass jab. He was more active throughout the fight in spots anyway, you know, overall. And then, like, he's throwing an uppercut here and there. You know what I mean? He just prevented Maestre from getting inside. So there might be some back and forth here and there within rounds, but it was just, he just couldn't get inside. And it was a really, really good performance, especially on a late replacement. I know he was training and all that, and he's generally a gym rat. And so when when this fight was announced as a replacement, I was happy. I was like, oh, that's going to be a good fight. I didn't think Fox would do what he did, but he did. I mean, it was an easy fight. Like I said, easy fight to score. I mean, you can even give Maestro four rounds. Go ahead, give it to him. It's still 8-4. Give him five rounds if you want. I don't give a shit. Whatever. It's still 7-5. I mean, this one is just, to me, very easy. And most people, you know, scorecards 113, 114, 115, 112, 8-4. So you had eight rounds there. And then obviously the 117, 110, that's 10-2. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say it was a shutout like some people, you know. When there's a robbery, they always make it even seem worse as far as the scorecards. But it's really hard to make this one seem worse because it was that bad. Like I said, I mean, I'd be willing to bet someone on this one that it's not going to, you're not going to top it for robbery of the year. I don't know how much money I'd put down because this is boxing after all, right? I don't want to get stupid here, but I mean, what the hell? This was just bad. This was just bad, right? And it's bad regardless, right? It's bad if it's on an app. It's bad if it's on ESPN Plus or Showtime or ESPN. But when you know, and I'm not saying it's some kind of huge, show on Fox this time around. I didn't even see the rating. I'm sure it was pretty mediocre, but I mean, what in the hell? I'm actually getting phone calls as we speak. Sorry, Patrick, doing a live show, but that's actually somebody I was talking to earlier today, too. I talked to three different people about the Pacquiao-Spence fight before I even knew that it was done. Getting plans together on where we're going to watch it, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, yeah, Fox got robbed, right? Really bad. So it did seem like they were going to work this out where Maestre was going to, fight Stanonius for interim trinket? Is that what they were trying to line up? Because I know I said earlier maybe it was Jamal James in his next fight they were going to try to line that up. But they had him on the same card, you know. So it's just, this one was bad, dude. You know, there's bad scorecards in a tight fight. That happens way too many times, right? That's something to complain about, but I don't really go and call those robberies, you know? Like the scorecard you know, not even long ago, right, with Castaño and Charlo, right? I could totally understand why people thought Castaño won. I thought it was a very competitive fight, but, you know, I could definitely see. If I had to pick a winner, Castaño's the winner, but, you know, it wasn't a robbery. It was just a badass scorecard, right? Just shitty scorecard. But this stuff, I mean, 10-2? I don't even really, I'm not sure you can go 10-2 on the other side, right? But 10-2? Holy shit. And 8-4, I mean, this was easy. There's no way this is 10-2. But to make matters worse, so you had people tied. The WBA special was bad enough, right? And then you had some ties with the judges in Venezuela. And this dude's from Venezuela, and they're based there, and that type of stuff. But then the judge, now the Twitter account is deleted, but the judge, straight up beyond ignorant, straight up racist shit on the Twitter. I mean, clearly, it was like, and even Fox was saying, like, so I never really had a chance at this one. And how could you say he could? You know what I mean? I mean, when you read some of those tweets, just oh my god, just horrendous. It's like, wow, dude. It's no surprise on Twitter or in our country that people think this way with the ignorance and racist stuff, but. Yeah, man, that was bad. Here's a message from the WBA. The review of the fight was ordered immediately. Ooh, based on preliminary scorecards received in a direct. Okay, so scorecards received indicates a direct rematch could be ordered. The judges, who were also accepted by the Minnesota Commission, will be interviewed individually. That's what they're going with. And much like, you know, from time to time, when it's this horrendous, right? Yeah, I like to, back in the day, it would be sending letters. You can make phone calls, you know, obviously emails. You can email the Office of Combative Sports Minnesota, the Office of Combative Sports Minnesota, okay? And you can, you know, just Google that, basically, and you can send in your message, your email and whatnot, or fill out a complaint form or whatever, you know what I mean? Does this 100% fix it? No. What was it? Gloria Martinez was her name. And that's not to just let her off the hook because she's a racist, or let the other ones off the hook, I should say, because she's a racist. But you can fill out this form, okay? The Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry Office of Combative Sports grievance form. It'll, you know, you put your address, you know, your complaint, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, if you want to, you know, whether it's a petition, whether it's this type of stuff, this is important. I mean, does it fix it? Apparently not, right? Because this is not anything new, sending this stuff out. But at least you can say you did something, right? And enough people do it, you know, who knows? The thing is, it just doesn't hurt, you know what I mean? But that was ridiculous, and I really hope that Fox gets this rematch. I mean, just to kind of save face. When I say save face, I'm using that term real lightly. Because there's no saving face with this one. But just based off of that, I would be shocked if there's not a rematch. That said, it's boxing. So I guess nothing shocks me. But overall, some of these let's see how they turn out type fights that we've gotten the last few weeks, this card just didn't really turn out, you know what I mean, besides the robbery and stuff like that. You know, you're like, wow, it was a boring card, but then, wow, that got worse, you know. But I really thought, you know, I thought Fox really looked good, though. You know, I thought he looked really good. That's all I got to say. I thought he looked really good. Anyway, what else we got here? We got some stuff. stuff from DAZN, Fabio Wardley, and Nick Webb. Actually, Webb had early success. He had these looping shots, whether it's like a right or a left-hand looping shot or an uppercut. But Wardley, even, you know, early on in the fight, he did manage to flip some of that momentum, and he started working the body with hooks. You know, the body in head with hooks, really, and it was a TKO. A lot of people were saying it was an early stoppage, and I get that, you know. But we'll see where Fabio goes. But, you know, Webb did, like I said, have some success early, but it didn't last. Babic and Bennett. This was actually just a great, what they used to say, slobber knocker, right? Two big dudes going at it. Babic even said after, they call him the savage, right? He said, I wasn't ready for all that. I got to admit, I didn't see that fight coming that way. And right off the bat, I mean, I did think, like, Babic landed the better shots even in the first round there, but there were several exchanges. And, you know, even in the second round, Babic kind of early and late did probably enough, right? But just those looping punches by Bennett. And, you know, by the second or third round, he already looked tired. Both of them look a little, you know, a little tired at times. And, you know, Babic would kind of start well and kind of sizzle out a little bit. Bennett would flurry and then kind of start gassing, but then they kind of, you know, Babic would fire back. And so it was a fun fight. You know, Babic in the fifth round was landing hooks with both hands, several hard right hands by Babic, and wasn't able to answer the bell. What would that have been, the sixth round bell or the fifth round bell? I can't remember, but I think it was the sixth round bell. So fun fight, though, very entertaining. And then Kid Galahan and Dickens. Galahan, I mean, the first, what, eight or nine rounds, the jab, the combination, just outclassing him, outworking him. You know, it wasn't just a jab. He started throwing really nice hooks and uppercuts as well. I'd say through the first eight or nine, I'm looking at my scorecard, I had it 7-2, something like that. And more, you know, as the rounds wore on, more and more Dickens' eyes started swelling up pretty majorly. I think it was the 10th round where there was a deduction, a low blow deduction on Galahad. But between the damage, the eye damage, and just the punishment in general, in the 11th round, Galahad scored the TKO. And it, just look at jabs, right? I mean, copy box, whatever, but 122-25 jabs alone. So that was a great performance. He looked about as good as I've seen him. Looked damn good, no doubt about it. So really great performance. It'd be interesting to see if he can put some more of those together. And also, oh, yeah, we had another WBA special. I forgot about that. We had an interim WBA for that Michael Conlan and TJ Donnet. What is Donnie? Donahue? Donahue? Doheny? Doheny? And that was just a clear, real basic, you know what I mean? He boxed on the outside behind his jab for quite some time, did Conley. He was just, it was a clean performance, I thought. I thought he, you know, he looked really good. He did, you know, at times, he definitely scored knockdowns and stuff like that. You know, in the middle rounds, TJ started kind of getting into the fight and whatnot. But overall, you know, it was, I actually didn't score it because I was kind of busy during it and just kind of watching it. Otherwise, I'd give you the scorecard. But pretty basic. You know, pretty basic interim WBA. And that was featherweight, too. For some reason, I thought Conlan had gone to 122 and stayed there, but I was wrong. That was at 126. And we started hearing, you know, this should be the real title, because Leo Santa Cruz, it did sound like This was on ESPN Plus, by the way. Because, you know, he hasn't been there in a while, and so it's like, are you going to go to featherweight or not again? Or you know, because it did sound like Leo was going to go back to it. But, you know, it was a clean win. What were the scorecards, actually? I think I wrote that down. Maybe not. Oh, yeah, 116, 111, 2, and then 119, 108. So, you know, good win. But I think it was he hurt him with like a left to the body, I believe. And he did try to like finish him, but Donahue, you know, was pretty game there for a while and made it, I don't know, can you really call that all that competitive? I did think, considering some of the damage he was taking, he definitely made it, you know, maybe the momentum, he didn't ever take the momentum all the way over, per se, but, you know, they were kind of, I don't know, I mean, now that I remember, Conlon did have a bloody nose, so he did, you know, it was a decent fight. I thought it was a decent fight. I didn't, like I said, I didn't score it because it was one of those fights where I'm kind of talking to somebody, doing something, but still watching it, you know? So, but a good win, like I said, in general. So I'm sure we'll see more of him. But overall, not really going to go too deep into that Tuesday card from last Tuesday. But as I mentioned last week and even a little bit earlier in the show, I like the setting of it. Like, first of all, it was free. There was no exhibitions, right? But it was free. You didn't have to pay, you know, to watch it. Because Triller bought Fight TV. So you could just watch it, you know, for free on that. But the versus thing, you know, the mixture of versus, which a lot of times is a little bit more old school hip hop. They've done one somewhat new school, but not even like new. You know what I mean? Not in the tens anyway. And of course not in the 20s. But, you know, the Locks and Dipset was the versus. You know, that was the main event. And it was a different take. I won't go too long on this, but it was a different take on it because before a lot of them were like a battle, right? You go back and forth with like, it was set up 20 tracks against 20 tracks. We've seen some go over that. Whether it's producers, whether it's old school R&B groups, whether it's, you know, Ghostface Killer and Raekwon, which was actually my favorite one before this. That was the most back and forth fun one. I do like how a lot of these, they've told stories during this thing about the song or that type of thing. This one, a little different vibe. You had a live crowd and it was on a New York tip, right? It was Kiss. Single-handedly, don't get me wrong, you know, I did enjoy the Locks back in the day. Styles P is a damn good rapper. I still remember that KG basketball commercial, for those who are old school remember that one. But Jadakiss shut it down. And you can actually go watch that battle, the versus, right on Fight TV for free still, by the way. But that was fun. That was fun. Now, like I said, if they put that on pay-per-view and it was those fights, I'm not signing up for that. But, and I think they still do it live on Instagram, too, the versus thing. But Jadakiss shut it down. And from the start, he was just like, just going New York City on it. You know what I mean? He was, the way he was saying, why are these guys rapping over their song or their lyrics? Like, you can hear, you know, the track. You can hear the audio of the track, you know, in the lyrics, and they're rapping over, and it sounds kind of shitty, right? Because it was a live performance with a crowd, which made it that much more intense. But Jadakiss was just giving them shit. Like, I thought we were in the Mecca. This is New York City, right? What do they keep talking up? They want to talk, we want to rap, you know? They keep talking and rapping over their their own voice. You know, it was, that shit was funny. But anyway, like I said, I like the vibe of the versus thing. I'm obviously biased, you know, because I'm an old school hip hop, you know, hip hop fan. So that on paper, I was anticipating that anyway. But I can't sit there and say if they would have charged pay-per-view for those type of fights, I wouldn't have contributed. You know what I mean? But that shit was fun. That just had that throwback. And now the versus, this, you know, whoever wants to do a versus where they're actually battling, like live concert stuff, Jadakiss just set the bar. And he really showed the young dudes how to do it. Not to mention Dipset. You can see Dipset was there just for a celebration. Like, this is fun, man. This is going to be great. Do we get to talk about what we were thinking when we wrote this song? Nope, Jadakiss wouldn't have it. That shit was funny. Anyway, I already kind of went over the unfortunate Errol Spence torn retina thing. It'll be really interesting to see how long that'll take him to get back. You know, definitely, you know, thoughts go out to him. I really hope, you know, we really need him as a, you know, in the prime, you know, guy that with a name and a fun fighting style, to say the least. But in the same breath, the way boxing goes, you know, like, I'm happy for Ugas, dude. He's been wanting a big fight for a long time. Fair amount of people thought he did enough to beat Porter, you know, back in, what was that, 2019? So I'm happy for Ugas on that one. But yeah, just a bummer, dude. It's just like, I'm not going to go on that what I said at the start of the show. I'm not going to keep bringing that up. But yeah, that the last like couple of weeks have been rough, and obviously, you know, seeing that Canelo plant, you know, fall out for Mexican Independence Day, and then now Canelo's not even going to fight on that weekend. I mean, the third year in a row, and I know last year there was some, you know, contract issues with Golden Boy, so I don't really blame him for that. But the last three Mexican Independence weekends, he hasn't fought on them. It's just, that just sucks, man. But there is, I don't even know if I want to say this, but they're back in talks. They're back in talks. For November, it seems. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm not going to get too excited about that one. But I'm going to go ahead and bring in a great boxing mind, John. And we're going to go over some of the weekend debauchery. But also, I'm looking forward to this. You know, I'm trying to keep it positive, right, with the Spence news. But Rigondeaux and Casimiro, even Virgil Ortiz against Kovalauskas, the Mean Machine. I'm looking forward to that. So there is, it's a jam-packed weekend, no doubt about it. Let's go ahead and bring in John into the fold. Let me unmute him here. What's going on, John? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris, good to be here, especially on a night that we've got a lot to unpack and there's plenty of things to vent about. So in that sense, like you said, staying positive, it's a good night to be talking about boxing, but as you already were touching on some of it, there's certainly a lot of negatives going on that can't really be ignored that are definitely worthy of some breakdown.
Yeah, it really is. And I actually led, just to get it out of the way, with the Pacquiao, you know, or the Spence news, really. And you know, it is what it is. You know, we can talk, you know, you can give your thoughts on that or whatever, and you know, Pacquiao, Ugas or whatever, but obviously, I really wanted to lead with what happened here in my city. Unfortunately, that the 10-2 scorecard, and then when you see the judge in the Twitter account, and I mean, what were your thoughts when this whole thing went down? Watching Fox box beautifully, here's a guy that kept himself in shape as a late replacement. I know he was getting paid, but, you know, he's a guy that we all know is a gym rat, you know, and it was nice to see him go out there and look really good and do some really good stuff and counter and jab and have the movement and what looked to most of us anyway as a clean win. What'd you think of this whole debacle after, though? And it just kept unraveling like it does in boxing, unfortunately.
Well, first, since you mentioned the fight itself, we'll touch on that first. You know, I agree with what people have said. It's very rare, and even now, a few days after the fight, it's still held. I mean, nobody, and usually that's the biggest overstatement in the world, and I'm the first to say it, but that's what I mean. It's not on this one. I mean, nobody thought Maestre won, except the three judges. I didn't. I was actually one of the people that watching the fight, and I watched it as it happened. I mean, I thought it could have been a 10-2 for Fox easily. I thought what was really notable about the fight as well was that, to me, in the second fight, it even looked like Maestre had given up. He looked discouraged. I mean, Fox is not a puncher, but he scored a big, clean knockdown, which, yeah, it's one round. And even these judges, rightfully so, of course, gave him the 10-8, about the only thing they got right. But, you know, in the course of a fight, that does show that it's kind of even something that you look as you're judging a fight, that it shows like, well, Fox is not normally a puncher, but he dropped him. You know, it kind of almost is a reminder that even though he's a boxer and normally has a low KO percentage, that in this fight he's landing some good shots along with that good boxing. You know, of course, he's not getting hit clean. He's not taking any shots. And look to me in the second half of the fight like Maestre had really pretty much given up. And I'm a guy, I'll be the first to say it, because I think there's a lot of good reasons for it. I've said it before. I'm a person who favors aggression, effective aggression, which is one of the scoring criteria, because I feel like, you know, if we're going to have entertaining pro boxing, you have to have a slant to the guy trying to make the fight. And, you know, Maestre was moving forward, and I'm always somebody that's really open to that. In other words, I'm if you want to call it benefit of the doubt, I'm somebody that's always given the benefit of the doubt for those reasons to the effective aggressor. And, you know, with my inclination like that, I didn't think the guy was winning any rounds. You know, he was reduced to, like you said, came out kind of strong, but then he got dropped, and then he was totally reduced to one punch at a time, and he wasn't even landing that, and then he wasn't doing much as the fight went on. You know, Fox kept working, but I think, understandably, he pretty much thought he had it in the bag, but he kept boxing well the whole fight. And I thought it was clear. You know, the broadcasters thought it was clear. Marcos Villegas, doing the scoring for Fox, thought it was clear. I thought it was clear. I mean, this was not the one, like you and I have talked a lot, and you and I agree on these things. What made this one so unusual is this was not like, I think a lot of times when people cry robbery, outrage, that one scorecard ruined it. They're not really being fair for the reasons you and I have talked in the past, that if you have a very competitive fight and 10 rounds are close, but a judge legitimately doing his or her job says, hey, one guy won all 10 of those rounds, you can have a wide scorecard in a very, very competitive fight if you just keep giving the close rounds to one guy. What I'm saying is I didn't think there were close rounds in this one. I mean, I just thought Fox was clearly winning almost all these rounds. And, you know, there was no doubt. And then everybody who watched it seemed to think there was no doubt. I mean, you know, it wasn't one of those deals either. Like even people overseas who saw it, you know, they weren't interpreting it like the people watching in the U.S. had a U.S. bias against this Venezuelan fighter. You know, it was the opposite. I mean,
right.
It was just, it seemed like everybody agreed. So that's my take on the fight itself. Now, one thing that I learned immediately after the fight, normally I always used to watch this kind of stuff very closely before the fight. And then, you know, I knew there was years that they had gotten away from it, and it might have slipped by me with all these WBA interim belts and WBC franchise and WBC interim, that commissions, and this is where you could maybe fill me in on Minnesota, Chris. I thought of you immediately after this fight for that reason when I found it out. Because, of course, you do it before the fight and they announce these things, but really on this card I wasn't paying that much attention until immediately after the fight ended, where I realized then that Minnesota had let the WBA picked the judges. And, you know, there were a lot of strong commissions in many years, you know, that as the alphabets got worse and worse, and this goes back to your golden age of boxing, which you really can call it in the early 80s and stuff, but, you know, where then some commissions were like, you know, when it got ridiculous after a while with these judges who were incompetent and, you know, the corruption, that, you know, they're not going to let the WBA come in and just come up with three judges, or, you know, the WBC. And,
right,
you know, apparently the WBA, because out of stupid, because there's no, for lack of a better word, there's no reason to call anything else, for a stupid WBA interim belt, you can't be a commission and let, I mean, Minnesota's been having fights lately. You know, maybe, you know, we know PBC's been bringing them in, but, I mean, you can't have the WBA going to a credible boxing commission. You know, we're coming in with three judges, you know, or we're coming in with judges, or we want a judge from here or there. That's how you used to get these crazy robberies in the past a lot of times. Like you and I have agreed, it doesn't mean all boxing commissions are perfect. It doesn't mean there's never been any corruption in the United States, but you still got to look at better structures and systems compared to others. And even with all their flaws, still, you know, the Nevada State Commission is going to be better than the alphabets. You know, I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with all the fights in Vegas, it just is. I don't care. So, like you and I have both said, you know, when people start saying this stuff, oh, well, this fight's in Vegas or this fight's in Texas, I never pay any mind to that for those kind of reasons, because, you know, there's nothing worse than the WBC coming up with three judges or the WBA coming up with three judges. I mean, you know, we've seen that.
Yeah, they're
throughout.
Bad enough. We don't need them picking the fucking judges.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, so what I wanted to get into with you with the breakdown is, so we talked about the fight itself, now getting into a little bit of the WBA thing, because I think what you and I have said is correct, and you even have to apply it to this situation. And this is now what some people kind of aren't doing. Like, you know, and this is part of the lawyer coming out in me, but this is a lot of times the good part of being a lawyer. There's bad parts and there's good parts. Is, you know, you start thinking about there's got to be some evidence and there's got to be some logic. And what I'm getting to is, you know, even like Lou DiBella had a mysterious tweet, you know, I know what this corruption is. And I'm not saying this thing's not bad, but like, still, everybody's pointing at these connections and we know they're there, but nobody's really intelligently explaining, you know, what the end game of this conspiracy was and what it was about. You know, we've got theories thrown around, but then they get into more of the reaching ones. So I'm trying to dial this back down to earth and evidence and say, let's go throughout boxing history, even over the last like little over 30 years, like things we know have happened. Okay. We know the morning after Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson, you know, Jose Suleiman tried to get up on a dais with Don King and say Tyson really won by knockout. Okay. I mean, that there's just no more absurd instance we can think of than that one, because that is as absurd as it gets. So we know they'll do something like that. And then they got shouted down. In other words, they were trying to give, because King didn't have a rematch clause. So they were trying to give they were trying to make Tyson still be the champion, which was absurd after he got knocked out. And they got shouted down. Then you had regular media covering boxing. You still had more independent-minded boxing media, guys that could make money on it, you know, and maybe their publication wasn't tied in, you know, with any entity, that type of thing. And then they got shouted down, and they backed off. Like, that's not happening enough anymore, in other words. So they got – but that's like one of your most – and remember, the scorecards were ridiculously – had Tyson in the fight before he got knocked out in that fight too. So, you know, when Douglas had you know, been winning all the rounds, even though he got dropped. You know, he'd been winning all the rounds. And the round right after he got dropped, he came out and he was all over Tyson, battering him. You know, of course, one of the greatest performances of all time. So that, you know, you've got that. And then the one blemish on the rings, you know, one of the big blemish on the rings legacy to prove nobody's perfect. Not saying they are perfect, but still, it's better than the alphabets. And I'm not putting them with the alphabets, but just that these things happen. We know King had that USBA scandal then in the late 70s when he was having a USBA tournament on ABC. And this is a credit to the fans of the era, though. that's what King bribed the ring ratings panel to fix, because this is where you give the fans of the era credit. The tournament was being based on the ring ratings, not any alphabet ratings, because the fans knew to look at that and not the alphabets back then. But then King went and tried to fix the ring ratings. So, you know, these are things that we know happened. You know, we know we had Aram testifying about paying people in one of those alphabet trials some years ago. So we know stuff like this has happened, you know, a lot of this with the alphabets. Okay. We know the WBO has in its charter, so this is open, that ratings are based in part on what the TV networks want. Okay. So, I mean, that's just a fact. So, you know, we're getting into facts. Why I'm saying all this is it would seem that the facts, I mean, let's face it, it's not like Maestre is going to really necessarily rake in that much money, but he would make it. It's where this is kind of where you get to the crux of the alphabets. This is what I'm trying to get to, is where I think you can tie it to more logical what they've done in the past. You look at their ratings. We know their ratings are terrible. Okay. And we know that certain promoters with connections get benefits in the ratings. So this is the part where I think you got evidence. You know, this would seem to be, you know, the WBA, you know, favoring Maestre, just like they do, got, you know, fighters in ratings and things like that, where they're trying to get in bed with certain people. I mean, I don't know if, you know, this is what we don't know. I mean, some people are assuming they were, but I don't know about that. I mean, even though it was on a Fox, let's face it, this was not a great card. You know, was PBC trying to push Maestre, even though he was on Fox? I mean, heck, Johnny Rice was on Fox right before that. So that's another issue that we can talk about later on. But I think PBC's made a big mistake there, but they're obviously lowering the bar to the floor and what they're putting on Fox this year. You can't deny it. I mean, it's just what it is. So yeah. I don't think just Maestri is on Fox or PBC. You know, everybody assumed that this was some sort of PBC conspiracy with this guy. You know, it might have been PBC. You know, obviously there's just no disputing PBC started wanting to throw WBC and WBA belts in their telecasts after ignoring it for about a year, which was totally to their credit. So we know, you know, that's probably why they probably, with what they've been doing, wanted a WBA belt on the show. And then, you know, the WBA was pushing this guy with connections with their people like they do with the ratings. I just think it's a good thing to compare it to that. So, you know, and because, you know, I can go back 30 years for myself. When the WBA or the WBC was controlling the judges, I mean, you can go back over decades. That's when you would get the worst. You know, that's when you would get the worst, where you would know it's coming for a certain guy. You know, more than anybody, when they say this is the fights in Vegas or the fights in Texas, you and I both agree that's when people get some crazy conspiracy theories that don't really make sense. But this stuff, you know, all you got to do is look at their ratings. So this is not imagining things, because you know there's nothing logical about those ratings. You know, you and I we all can agree on that.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm kind of getting to, is we know they'll do it with the ratings. So, you know, this had one of their plastic belts on the line, and then that's when those connections coming in. So, you know, the WBA had some people that obviously liked this guy or were connected with his people, and you know, Mendoza himself throwing it out there, being kind of bold, but he might not be totally wrong. As corrupt overall as these organizations are, I guess, you know, would this be an evidence when somebody was getting straight out paid to do this? I mean, like, you know, you're going to have Maestre win, we're going to pay you to do that. I don't know, you know, I don't know if it would go quite that far. It just seems like.
Yeah, because what's the end game, like you said? What's really the end? Is it worth that kind of risk just for him to get beat the next fight, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be worth the risk. I mean, you know, I mean, you got to say, this is where it would matter, like, but this isn't the case now. Like, let's say this was, you know, 10 years ago, and Manny Pacquiao was guaranteed to to, you know, bring in a million PPVs pretty much whenever he's fighting or something like that. I mean, I'm not saying that was exactly the case, but you know my point. Like, and then, you know, Maestre was going to fight Pacquiao after this fight, and it was set or something like that. I mean, then you're talking about dollars. Then you're talking about dollars the guy's going to get that maybe you would think the end game, they might take more risk. But it's hard to, you know, Maestre fighting Michael Fox for a WBA interim belt. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that there was a lot of pay going on for this Saturday night Fox card that PBC, let's face it, was not even trying hard on. That does seem to be a bit of a stretch. It seems like, and let's face it, you know, like you pointed out, and it was good that this was uncovered, but the one judge, it does appear to be a racist, who had the worst scorecard. I mean, that's a bias, but that's different than being paid. You know, that's different than paid to score for Maestro. I mean, like when you have the conspiracy theory and you're investigating, you got to have a theory you're operating on. I mean, which is it? Is she a racist? Like, just because she's bad in a lot of ways, I mean, is she a racist? Yes, she appears to be a racist, but is that why she did it? Or did she do it because the WBA paid her? I mean, you got to make up your mind what this conspiracy is about. I think it's probably a big bias, like we're saying, like the ratings where, you know, there are favors with these ratings. We know that. And you know, probably not set, but it's probably, you know, back scratching of each other and, you know, they're going to do it. I'm not saying it wasn't that here. I'm sure it probably was with this Maestre and his people, but, you know, I don't know if this was some kind of a straight pay deal where these judges got bribed. Now, the New York Post years back, again, when you had actual boxing media, when there were some controversial cards in New York and New Jersey, I mean, this theory could be true. This is more of the bias theory, you know, that their theory was, because they were trying to make sense with it, that, you know, the judges knew that promoters were paying their expenses and things like that, and that they had gotten to like that, and they knew, they wanted certain promoters to keep bringing them out to fights and paying the expenses, you know, that type of thing. So I can buy these bias type things. When people say like this straight corruption, I mean, there's a lot of risk for some of these things. There's not much gain. So it's not that you're trusting their morals, but you got to use logical. I would think that this was probably a big bias situation where they're doing favors for certain people, certain promoters, certain management, and it was just a big bias in favor of Maestre. And to me, in the U.S., I just don't think any commission should be, you know, agreeing on alphabet appointed officials.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just a little bit of background on the Minnesota Commission, just in general, the Athletic Commission and Combative Sports Commission. You know, for a chunk of decades, I guess you could say, Minnesota was a place where you could kind of go get a W regardless. It wasn't – I'm not saying it was, like, extra shady, but – It did. Former independent governor Jesse Ventura in 2001 did disband the commission. It got under Tim Pawlenty in 2006. It got back up and running and has been pretty strong since then. Mendez did have an issue a chunk of years ago, and he did get a rematch. That happened here actually on Friday Night Fights on ESPN. I think that was like 2013 or something, maybe 2014. So to be straight up, you know, it's not – well, obviously, if they're allowing that selection to happen off the WBA, that's shaky as hell. And maybe we just – you know, because we haven't had this type of robbery here yet – it hasn't been exploited, and how many times do they do this? And that's something that I now will start to look into. But let's just say this. It's not a athletic commission that's been strong since the 30s. You know what I mean? It definitely had its issues back in the day, and we're talking way back in the day. But it was an active town, obviously, as we see, you know, Sugaray Robinson fought here. Joe Lewis fought an exhibition here. Henry Armstrong fought here. So it definitely has a fan base and all that. I know just in the armory, side note, boxing and old school wrestling, which was more real, used to, like, do huge numbers beyond the Minneapolis Lakers. But, yeah, 2001, Ventura did actually disband the commission, and that was Scott Ledoux was part of that, and he was part of the new stuff, too, and he did help usher in a new quotations in the air era of boxing in Minnesota. So whatever that's worth.
No, it's good. It's real good information. I was looking forward to talking to you about it because you being from Minnesota and being based there, and this is where this all took place, and it is a key issue in this particular fight because that's something that, you know, I can go back 35 years that was always a red flag for me was – and a lot of U.S. commissions, you know, had pushed back against that, and that made me comfortable, which was, you know, we're not going to just have the alphabets come in and, you know, appoint these judges from all over the place that nobody's familiar with, and the backgrounds are shaky, and frankly, it is more suspicious, you know, even though sometimes people don't like them, you know, we're going to have, you know, experienced judges here that are going to, you know, make the call. I mean, I feel, you know, hey, you could say American bias, but I still feel better. Look, this was a fight that everybody, and I thought that's what was so bizarre about it. I mean, this was a fight everybody agreed with was a robbery, and it was a Venezuelan fighting in America, an American in the United States. I mean,
right.
Which is utterly,
yeah,
you know, so for biases
it.
To
that
come
just
in.
That proves the whole scenario. Yeah, exactly. It's so
it
weird.
It really does make, it makes it stick out. It really does because, again, but then you had, you know, the WBA getting to appoint the judges in this bout. And, you know, Minnesota has had a good boxing surge in recent years, and everybody watching it, I've talked to other people about it. They like the atmosphere they see there. Like you said, fan base. In tough times for boxing, fan base seems solid. And, you know, obviously that's why PBC keeps coming back, and you've had some Minnesota fighters like Truax and, you know, Jamal James, among others. So, you know, they had a reorganization, probably helped, but I'm just speculating, and then you know better than me. It might be just with this recent surge that, you know, that their commission probably needs to be a bit stronger.
Yes.
As they're getting more cards and higher profile cards. I mean, heck, they've had, you know, Fox is still Fox, even with lower numbers and, you know,
right.
with some of the fights we've talked about. So, you know, they've had Fox shows, that's national TV coming from there. And it might've been that reorganization you mentioned was good and needed, but maybe with this recent surge of the last few years that, and sometimes you do see that in other states, even some of the bigger ones, I noticed then there's sort of a reorganization and they get new people or strengthen some things. It would seem that, you know, with boxing, at least, you know, having a bit of a surge in Minnesota that maybe it's just where now the commission has to be strengthened a bit. Probably that would
yeah.
be it. You know, if they're going to keep getting fights like that, you know, it's something that they hadn't had. Like you said, you know, this is different from days in past years when Minnesota had kind of slipped to be just kind of part of a Midwest circuit where there were some club fights where
yeah.
guys went through and picked up some wins. I mean, you know, of course, Oklahoma mm-hmm. used to be like that until they got the casino business going and stuff like that. You know, things change. I mean, remember, you know, because a
right.
lot of these were on USA, and it did come out of nowhere, but what was that, you know, like, In Mississippi, you know, all of a sudden they started to have it all those fights, you know, on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
And Louisiana.
Yep. At that
and,
casino,
know,
too.
At that casino. Like, those, it's not that those commissions necessarily got great, but you did see them, like, sort of improving because there were so many fights.
Right.
That, you know, and they were on national TV, national cable, that they had to kind of strengthen their game, get better. It might be kind of like that here, that this is just a lesson that, you know, you can't let the WBA come in and start calling shots or or influencing things. So yeah, but it was, you know, it was bad. And then, you know, you saw the coffee that's going back a little, but you'd imagine this one was even worse. I mean, that Michael Coffey card, even with Milinicki and Spencer, I mean, and you know, they're just prospects, but still they've been seen and they're known. They're kind of popular in their own way. I mean, that wasn't even enough. And of course, Coffey flopped miserably in the main event. But the numbers were really poor. They were really poor for that one. I think
662,000.
Really, we're talking national TV. I mean, you're talking well under a million. And then I would imagine this one actually could have been worse.
I think I remember seeing the overnight, and it was in the same ballpark. So that kind of tells you right there.
Yeah, you know, Devin, you had the corpse of Devin Alexander. You hate to be that mean, I mean, but, you know, walking around.
No, it's
around
true,
like
though. He's completely washed.
Yeah, look like I said it in seriousness. I don't want the guy to get hurt, but if you're going to do stuff like that, I mean, if PBC is going to insist out of loyalty of keep letting him fight and from God knows why he was on a Fox card, but they're going to do something like that. Heck, put him in with Spencer. I mean, might as well, you know,
right.
Yeah,
because
then all of a sudden
that's a real good fight for him, you know, like, hey, all right, this is an old vet, you know, people know this name or whatever, you know.
Yeah, instead of having Spencer fight some guy that's, you know, 8-4 that nobody's ever hurt with no KOs and everybody's ever heard of, I don't want, you know, Devin Alexander to get hurt, but if he's going to keep fighting anyway, let him get paid a little more and just put him in with Spencer or something like that. I mean, you know, I don't want to see these guys in fights like that. I mean, and, you know, Milinicki.
Especially when you had a nice crowd there for Vito, too, you know, it's kind of like, damn, you got to take advantage of that.
Yeah, Jersey. I mean, you know, I was disappointed, you know, when and a little bit. I know Coffey was going to get knocked out, but you know, when Washington was going to be in the main event, I was thinking about attending that personally myself. And I like Milinicki. Some people don't like Spencer. I don't quite get it. I mean, I think he's a good prospect. You know, so I was interested in that. It wasn't the greatest card, but Fox and Jersey, Milinicki's from New Jersey. But yeah, then you had the card change, and you know, he still brought some people. You could see that there was some local crowd people, even for some of those fights they were showing later on FS1. There was a heavyweight from Patterson on there.
Yeah, that was cool. I liked that because you could see these little sections, you know, of people rallying for their guy. That was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm in Jersey, Patterson's in my county, Passaic County, so I noticed that. I'm like, heck, there's just like you described. That's exactly what it was. There was like these little sections of you know, you had Milinicki, his people from Jersey, and you know, the heavyweight from Patterson, and you know, there was, you know, of course Coffey is from New York, and you know, right across the river there. So I mean, it looked like for the situation and that card, the live crowd was lively and okay, but just not a good card in opponent matchups for regular Fox. Just, you know, a lot of bad stuff going on like that, and it's not just PBC. I mean, I'm with you. A lot of people like to beat up on PBC, but I'm just going to throw it out there because we got to keep it balanced. I mean, you know, did anybody's revolution of the zone for boxing, you know, think it was going to be club fighters from the UK being shown at 3:00 in the afternoon in the US? I mean, that's not much of a revolution. And you know, even though it's somewhat
game changed. It's like, well, I don't see too much change actually. Who's broadcasting it, you know, like on the mic, they changed that. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell is that? And then, you know, again, people are not realistic because then they say, and I'm going to watch it and I have interest in it, but Virgil Ortiz, Kavalauskas. Okay, but Virgil Ortiz is a -1100 favorite. I mean, you know, if that fight, you know, if it was on PBC on Fox and Virgil Ortiz was a -1100 favorite, we know that faction of people would be screaming, saying, you're saying it's a good fight, but Ortiz is a -1100 favorite. We all know what's going to happen, but you know, on the zone, you have clowns saying it's a 50-50 fight. It's not a 50-50 fight. Ortiz is a -1100 favorite. He's a massive favorite.
Yeah, better not be. You know, if we think Virgil Ortiz is something, this better not be.
Yeah, and then Top Rank talked about, because, you know, last summer was the pandemic, and they were kind of the first to get back on there, and ESPN has shown over the years when they've gotten back into boxing that they want to run some stuff in the summer, but Top Rank was supposed to have this big summer on ESPN. Nothing happened. It's August 10th. I mean, we've got Franco Maloney 3. That's the big summer on ESPN. I mean, what happened? You know, I mean, we got to look at these things, all these promotional entities. I mean, there was supposed to be a big, ESPN and Top Rank are going to run this boxing all summer on ESPN. What happened? It's August 10th. So, some states have kids back in school. Bob, I don't like school starting that early. I'm a traditionalist like that, but I mean, in Jersey, it always started the day after Labor Day. But summer's over for some kids, and you got Franco Maloney 3 on. I mean, you know, NFL's preseason started, and the regular season's going to be coming. I mean, what happened? So, you know, it's not. You like to look for some positives, but. It's fallen into a lot of bad business as usual because Showtime's had the best schedule, and I've liked that. But, you know, look, I've just got to say it because I feel it's the truth. I mean, I think over those decades, even though there was a lot of great fights and moments, I think overall for the sport of boxing, I don't think the premium cable model was good for boxing, you know, because less
–
it's just available for less
clear.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because
it shrunk the exposure quickly.
Yeah, that's what concerns me is that I'm looking at it. I'm like, yeah, I agree with everybody else, and I'm looking forward to Saturday night. You know, we're going to be out Casimiro. You know, we got Gary Antonio Russell, you know, taking on Rodriguez. I mean, I'm looking forward to that stuff, but we're back. I get Showtime, but we're back to the premium cable stuff. I mean, you know, and the Zone is kind of like that on a stream without the other programming, and now – Hearn's USA operation seems to have shriveled up to nothing, and so he's
just
running.
I'm not seeing that 120 mil. I don't know. Maybe I don't have my protractor. I wasn't great in math and geometry and algebra and all that, you know. But I'm not seeing $120 million of product here for the Matchroom USA.
No, I mean the zone big bucks, which we agree. I mean the zone big bucks is Canelo. And that's why I think he floated back. You know, look, you can't – and, you know, Canelo, I agree. I mean, and I like Canelo. And I think in this modern era, when you look at his opponents, this is what the modern era has become. I think you do make a good argument, and it's the truth that he has fought better opponents than anybody else. That's just the way boxing is done. But with that understood, the part about Canelo, this is – part that other people don't even care about, but that disappoints me a little. Look, the guy, boxing's the most dangerous sport. He's got the right to take care of himself money-wise, and he should. It seems like he did that with the Zone, and he's kind of content to just kind of keep with that because he was the guy that got the big, you know, $30, $40 million fight, whatever, automatically with that contract. You know, some fights they overpaid on, but I'm with you, you know. We don't see Hearn's Match with USA. I mean, what fights are they? You know, what good fights are they giving us? You know, I mean, it's not. You know, it's Canelo and everybody else. I mean, it's not that you're. You know, maybe some fights people kind of like, but you know, not great matchups where people are like, I got to see this again outside of Canelo. But
back Dillian White's fight now again.
Yeah,
and we don't even know the opponent. You know,
his U.S. debut. I mean, we heard bad opponents keep getting floated, and now he still hasn't made his U.S. debut. But what I look at with the Canelo is what I kind of don't get is, and I've come to the conclusion now that he just doesn't care, which has disappointed me as an American. And I'm not saying boxing is only about the U.S., but the U.S. drives boxing. It has always with the money, let's face it. And it does, look, even with music and stuff, let's face it. Acts from the U.K. want to come over here. These are just facts. I mean, people in the U.K. are going to tell you that, who are being honest. Musicians are going to tell you that. I mean, you know, it's just the way it is. It's just a bigger market. So what I'm getting to with the Canelo disappointment is we know he spends a lot of time in the U.S. We always figured he could speak English, and he's speaking it pretty well and pretty entertaining and funny. That's all good. like this would all be great, but what I don't get, I'm disappointed in him because now he's got enough money. Let's face it. I mean,
yeah.
Even though he's taking a big risk, like he doesn't want to become a U.S. star. I don't get that. I mean, that's what I don't get. I mean, all his fights are in the U.S. I know that, but I think you know what I mean. Like he's just not focused on being a U.S. star. That's the part that it seems to me that he just doesn't care about. You know, he's getting his payday from DAZN now, and you know he's taking some interesting fights, and I like he's one of my favorite guys to watch fight, and I like the guy. I think overall he's good for boxing with his
100%.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really like the guy, but I'm just saying that kind of out of a little disappointment because, you know, nobody lasts forever, and you know he's getting into his 30s now, and you know. I mean,
sure.
That's why I thought he was getting that with where this. That's where I thought they talked undisputed and all that. But I thought really it was
right.
The cave plant for the PFBC and the U.S. exposure. And now maybe we're revisiting it. But he just doesn't. I mean, I get this feeling like he's not as focused on that as a guy at his point in his career should be.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, the undisputed thing is a seller. A big thing that
right.
does get people's
That's
attention.
Just a marketing thing.
Regardless,
yeah,
casuals especially. And then, you know, of course, Golden Boy has to have some of the blame the last few years, but they're not in it anymore. So now it's been
right.
3 years in a row that you've missed the Mexican Independence Weekend? Like, I just don't – that one throws me off. You know, we threw Golden Boy under the bench – or under the bus last year because obviously they did lie to Canelo and they did him wrong contact, you know, on the contract and signed something different to DAZN without him knowing. And clearly he's out of that contract now, but you know, you start to go, okay, well, it just wasn't only Golden Boy because here we are again, the guy's potentially, you know, allegedly getting an upfront guarantee money, the biggest upfront money he's gotten. And then at the closing seconds, he starts to go sideways with it. It's like, well, hold on. You were so worried about fighting on that date. Now you're not even fighting on a date in general. What are you going to – 7 weeks out, you're going to start bringing up, you know, late stuff in the deal. It just seems really weird. And it does kind of like – it's almost like that guarantee money. And we've
yep.
seen that, you know, with contracts – with promoters, right? You get a contract, okay, we're going to get lazy with it. Okay, we got the contract, forget it, you know? So, or the output deal. HBO, for a while, had the Golden Boy output, and, you know, that did good, but then bad, the blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, you're right. It's kind of like, you know, he got some credit this year because of his fight schedule, and he was active, and we knew who he was fighting, so we were okay with Yildirim because we knew what was coming in May. Okay, that's great. And he's the one who told us he wanted to fight in September, you know, and you're right. It is kind of like, it's almost like that guaranteed money kind of just, in a sense, spoiled him. And so he's thought he could get away with everything, even though he was given A-side treatment, he still tried to push it a little more. And clearly it's screwed up because now he's not even fighting on the Mexican Independence Weekend. And that's his 2 weekends. That's his 2 weeks throughout the year. You know, he gets those. And he earned them. Now, no one's saying he didn't earn them. He definitely earned them. But now it's like, well, dude, we could have scheduled something else around that time then.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, you know, there was a lot of evidence, and I think that's why the contract did end up getting thrown out. I mean, you know, Canelo's kind of argument against Golden Boy was, you know, you're taking, I think it was $5 million. You know, you're taking $5 million. And even though I'm getting a lot, you know, you're getting me pinned down to these fights on DAZN because you want to get $5 million because you're struggling, but it doesn't help me. And then he gets the deal broken, and then Golden Boy's out, and then he's got Hearn putting him on DAZN, you know, for a few more fights. And I think that was just what you're saying. It's that, you know, he was able to circle back, you know, cut Golden Boy's $5 million out, and then DAZN taking a little bit of a disc probably on that, paying them close to what they were paying them, but maybe a little bit less. That's why they were happy to get out of the deal. And, you know, that's more than he was going to get from anybody else. And he just didn't care about his exposure. And it's about you know, it is prize fighting and it's the most dangerous sport. You got to take care of yourself. But, you know, there is a point, it would only be a couple of guys you could talk about in boxing like that, and it would be like Canelo, Fury, Wilder, Joshua, because you can't really talk about anybody else like that with the danger, and they've got to pay trainers and taxes. But that these are guys that have made so much in the course of their career that you're not being callous or unsympathetic to say, well, maybe do you want to now still make the big money, but think about other considerations along with that, like, you know, what your legacy is going to be, or like that's what I'm looking at, or, you know, maybe you wanted to become a big mainstream star in the U.S. And I'm saying,
sure,
you know, he spends so much time there. I mean, apparently, you know, I've always understood he spends a lot of time in San Diego and all his fights are in the U.S.
Yep.
And he's now proven he can speak good English, figured he could. You know, I thought that would be for a Canelo.
And he still was getting paid huge. It's not like they were shortchanged, you know? I mean,
yeah,
the guy's getting an alleged career high, you know?
Yeah, I thought he'd want to, you know, kind of wanted the cappers of his career, you'd think would want to be a big U.S. legacy. Because let's face it, you know, if it was one or two guys, no big deal, went to the U.K. market and stuff. But there really can't be any dispute. He's fighting an awful lot of British guys. I mean, and he's working with Eddie Hearn, and you know John Ryder is just sitting there on deck if this Caleb Plant thing doesn't come through. And you know, I'm not looking for, you know, Canelo to not, you know, I'm not looking forward to watching Canelo take out John Ryder in three rounds, which I'll make that call now. You know, I don't need that. I mean, I don't know, you know, even if it's on my DAZN, I don't know if I need that. You know, it's getting to the point where I don't know if I need that on my DAZN anymore.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they can get that fight going for November. Hopefully they can, so they can get some you know, NFL college football exposure for Canelo, and like you said, and cross him over even more. And it's only going to help his bottom line, because now in this new, you know, arrangement he has, he can actually get more money from his live gate too. You know, so I mean, it's a great deal for him. But let's hope that they can get that done. Anything else from the weekend that you want to talk about before we get into this Rigondeaux Casimiro fight, which I'm really looking forward to?
No, just go over the action. You know, you covered it, but briefly going into some of it. I mean, I enjoy watching Babbitt. That part I do like on a Saturday afternoon, getting him. I think, heck, if there's going to a guy that would be a good guy to me for Hearn to bring in to the U.S., but I don't know how much there's going to be left in Matchroom USA. It just looks like now that the zone's in the UK, that they'll eventually be letting that shrivel. That's like, looks like where that's headed, because, you know, Babak, he's entertaining. I think some people underestimate him a bit. He has some amateur pedigree, and I think he's focused on entertaining, which I love. I like his whole attitude. But what I'm saying is, it doesn't mean he's necessarily going to beat him, but I think when he gets more formidable opposition, he'll tighten things up a bit. It doesn't mean he's necessarily going to win, but, you know, but the punch rate's real. I mean, that's where you can look at CompuBox stats sometimes. I mean, he lands more than heavyweights throw. You know, it's one of those kind of things. And you know, even though he's not big for a heavyweight, when you get those kind of discrepancies, you know, you're going to beat some guys. You're going to beat some guys with a low work rate and stuff. So I like watching the guy. I think he's interesting. And I did think Galahad looked good. He's had two fights in a row where he looked real good, where you don't notice it really, but his punches are obviously stinging and busting up people. We got Marrero to quit in the corner after landing a lot of stinging punches over a period of rounds. And then he busted up Dickens, but, you know, he had already knocked out Dickens some years ago. You know, people get too caught up with, well, that was at 122, and, you know, so what? I say it's four pounds difference, you know, so what? Just saying that, you know, yeah, and then say, well, Dickens, he did slip into the ratings, you know, transnational. They beat Walsh, who had kind of snuck into the back end of the ratings, but he was an older featherweight, you know, British fighter. And then, you know, he beat, he had beat Wood, who just had the big win over Kanzu, the upset. But, you know, he was basically just a British fighter before that. you know, wasn't a legit top 10 guy. So just saying that, I mean, I think when you talk about matchups, I mean, I see people now saying, well, you know, we got to look at Galahad because of who he's fought, you know, being better than Navarrete or a real threat. No, to me, that's, you're going too far. Navarrete's on a roll. No matter who he's fighting, you know, you can, he's just a difficult style matchup. He's got the power, the volume, the size for the weight. Yeah, he's going to be very, very tough for anybody. And I think when people are talking about Galahad on that level, they're getting carried away. You know, Hearn signed Galahad after the fight. He actually didn't have him signed for this fight. And Galahad seemed a little bitter. He was flirting with PBC recently before this fight, but apparently he signed a deal now with Hearn. I think the part about that might not be that good. I mean, the UK fans might want to see it, but I am going to say for U.S. fans, you know, especially if Warrington does beat Lara in that rematch, I don't think he's going to, but let's say he does. I think he's even favored. I don't get it, but I think he's favored. I mean, you know, him Wood and Galahad having a British round robin and throwing a bunch of alphabets belts in it, you know, Wood's got the WBA regular now, and Galahad's got the IBF as he was, him and Dickens, this was an IBF title fight. I don't know if that's all that thrilling. You know, Warrington and Galahad have already fought once, and I don't know if that's these are some of the things that concern me for upcoming in the future as to what we might be getting and not getting. You want to be optimistic, but I think there's some reason for pessimism.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is kind of funny. Like, this should be the real title. And then, okay, neither of them probably should be the real title. So why don't we just have
that's
somebody
fight to say.
That's
exactly.
Step up, and then we can make a title. How about that? You know what I mean? Like, instead of this bickering back and forth about interim and vacant and four titles and yada, yada, yada.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It is. Well, you know, now they got this in October. They're going to have some sort of special meeting. And a couple of years ago, remember the WBA said, we're gonna tidy up our household. And now they're saying they're going to do it again. It's like, man, that thing is way more out of control than it was even 4 or 5 years ago as far as the number of titles. So they're really, it's going to take them a long time to rope it all in. Maybe they'll have a big tournament and try to make it up for everybody. And then, you know, 2 years later, go right back to what they're doing. So. You know, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, and some of the fans already don't get it, and it's only been a couple of days. They're saying we need to be done with the WBA, and then after what happens with Spence today, the same fans are all concerned and clutching their pearls about, well, Pacquiao had this WBA belt, and then they took it away from him, and Ugas got it now. Are they going to be fighting for this WBA belt on the 21st? And shouldn't Pacquiao have it instead of – I mean, so they fall right into the belt. You should just be ignoring this nonsense. And even PBC should be knowing better after the debacle Saturday night and saying, do we really need to make this WBA title the centerpiece of this Pacquiao-Ugas fight? I mean, let's face it, Pacquiao is a legitimate all-time great and legend. I mean – it's not cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, if Pacquiao needs the WBA, the plastic WBA belt at this point in his career at 42, I mean, it's insanity. I mean, why would you care? I mean, why would you care? I mean, Keith Heideck even tweeted out and said that. Why the hell would anybody care? And, you know, at least he was speaking out on it. I mean, part of regular boxing media, and he's been a newspaper writer. I mean, but, you know, because fans today already, as soon as the Spence thing happened, they were wringing their hands about Pacquiao and the WBA belt, and Ugas has got it now, and I'm just like, what the?
Right.
What are you people thinking about?
Yep. And then, like we said a couple weeks ago, when JoJo Diaz won the interim, where they have three belts in the WBC, no, barely anything from that. So it's like,
right?
Why don't we just join together and say, screw this, you know, and not get this little tit for tat. But you're right. It's really just how big of a name is or whatever entity you dislike or like. Or it's just, It's just the same old, man. It's crazy sometimes. Let's get into, we got about, this is a little shorter show tonight. My mom's in town, so I'm trying to get as much mom time as I can. So we got about 21 minutes left of the live show. Let's jump right into Rigondeaux and Casemiro. You know, style-wise, this is kind of an interesting matchup. Casemiro, you know, he has this awkward style where he can bounce on the outside and use footwork, and at times look like he can really get, you know, away from punches and look defensively sound in an awkward way, I guess I would put it. But then also he can be very aggressive, and his defense will fail him. He just had an up and down career that it's slowly but surely he's kind of developed into a fighter that on the hardcore fight level people really like. You know, a lot of it I think is the aggressiveness and in some of these one punch, bam, the fight's TKO or over. You know, of late he's kind of been doing that. To Rigo, you know, Rigo has a style that a lot of people didn't like. There was many of writers and editors that titled their take on the fight, their result article when it came to that Nonito Donaire fight with Rigondeaux, and you know, he may have not punched him a bunch of times, but every single time he did, you could tell he was stinging Nonito. But how do you see this one play out? Obviously, Rigondeaux doesn't move as much now. It kind of plays out a little bit like Arislandi Lara. I know they're both Cuban. I know that's pretty lazy of me to go that way, but we don't see him move as much. I kind of feel like the first couple rounds are going to be weird and awkward and kind of slow, because I think Casemiro will be kind of worried about those counters, in one shot, you know, really pretty solid punch, especially at this weight now again. He's back at a weight where he's really good at, Rigo. How do you see this one going? I mean, is Father Time finally going to catch all the way up to Rigondeaux, or is this just going to be a more entertaining fight that he's going to be the more accurate fighter, the accurate puncher?
Yeah, as you know, Chris, I never cop out, but I'm still, as we're a couple days before the fight on this one, I'm still undecided, and the odds are relatively close. So, you know, initially I was leaning towards Casemiro, but as the fight gets closer, I've been leaning a little bit towards Rigondeaux, and I'm still waffling a bit. I think you've got it right. I mean, Rigondeaux is not quite moving like he was, and I agree. I think too many people do lazy comparisons. You don't want to, but I agree with you that Lara is kind of like Rigondeaux, but I'm going to then take some other guys that I think have some of this aspect in them. You know, there's some guys that just can't punch, and there's some guys that fight in an unaggressive, cautious style. I mean, I think that's like Lara. I think that's Rigondeaux. I think that's Billy Joe Sanders and even Caleb Plant. In other words, these are guys that I actually think they possess more power than people realize, but they're just not looking for knockouts, and they don't want to fight aggressively. But the difference for, like, you know, a Paulie Malignaggi, and there's others, just can't punch. These guys are not like that. These guys, you know, kind of by choice and style. But that matters because, you know, they can pop you. They can't hurt you. And that's where I think Rigondeaux and Lara are similar. I think Billy Joe Saunders could do that too when he wanted to. I think Plant can do it. Now, those guys all do it with their straight left. With Plant, it's the left hook. That's the difference. You know, he has a totally different style like that. But I do think with his left hook, you know, he can hurt you with that when he wants to, and he wants to commit to it. But most of the time, he just wants to box, and he's not looking at all for knockouts. So I think Rigondeaux, now he is sitting down on that a little more, just like Lara is in the older age. Yeah, maybe they just can't move as much. That does make for more entertainment, but he's still got boxing skill. I've been impressed, like you had mentioned, in recent fights with Casemiro as a power puncher. That looks for real to me, but I think even though Rigondeaux is at the advanced age, and people can overrate these size things. This is one that it might matter. Like, you know, Regan Diaz proven he can make bantamweight again like Donaire did, and credit to both of them because that's rare, but here within a couple years, we've got both of them pulling it off. So, like, Regan Diaz, a pretty good-sized bantamweight, and, you know, with good pop in that left hand, and Castro showing that power, but, you know, height-wise, he's not that tall. He was a flyweight. So, you know, that's when you start looking at this stuff a little more. You know, you had Regan Diaz fail against Lomachenko at 130 pounds. You know, a lot of times people overrate the weight class things, but, you know, 118 to 130, 12 pounds down there, that's a lot of difference. So what I'm saying is Regan Diaz proven he can make the weight now at 118, doesn't appear weak. He's got good size, so even at that advanced age, you lose the quickness, but as Donaire has shown in recent fights, he's going to be hitting pretty hard for a bantamweight, even though he's a boxer. So I think, you know, he might be able to hurt Casimiro, but I think Casimiro is going to be able to hurt him too. And then, so then what I get to is, you know, I think Regan Diaz, still even at the advanced age, he has the boxing skills that he's going to be making Casimiro miss some, but will he be throwing enough, you know, to win rounds if it starts going the route? And, you know, maybe they've each stung each other a little bit or something like that. You know, can Regan Diaz have the work rate that if it's going to go to a decision that he can get a decision? It's a tight call for, and I think really at Regan Diaz's age, the way Casimiro has been punching, you know, against Tete and Micah in his last couple fights, you know, it's not impossible that carries over. You know, he's the younger man. You know, maybe he's able to unload on him if Regan Diaz is too far over the hill. It's a pretty darn intriguing fight. I was leaning towards Casimiro with the power, but now I'm leaning towards Regan Diaz, even at the advanced age, with that size for the weight and the skill, and Casimiro being a little bit smaller, that he might just be able to neutralize him enough and win this thing. But I'm still waffling on this one, but that's the way I see it right now.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, I do like what I see as far as, you know, seeing a plus 170, plus 165 for Rigo. I definitely will take a flyer out on that.
I'm laughing. Sorry to interrupt, Chris, but I think that's what swung me. I was leaving Casimiro.
Yeah, right.
And then I said, you know, plus 170. I said, really? Yeah, man, I thought he could win this fight. I mean, I'm looking at a plus 70.
Right.
I'm thinking that. I may just be thinking he can win this fight.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that looks pretty nice there.
Yep.
Well, who do you think will win the Franco Maloney three, and then can Kavalauskas, beyond a power shot, do much to Virgil Ortiz? You know, his last fight, it wasn't his best performance, and I think, to your point, on paper, he should cleanly win, like you mentioned, the odds and whatnot. I think there is a little bit more interest, not the 60-40 or you know, 50-50, like you were talking about with some people on Boxing Twitter, but I think people are just hung up on the combination of Ortiz not looking his best his last fight, and also the meme machine, rightfully so, earned a knockdown, or should have earned a knockdown against Crawford. I think the combination of that has people thinking this is going to be a tighter fight. How do you think Ortiz is going to handle this, and what do you think about the Franco Maloney? And then also, you know, like you said, the co-feature on Showtime is pretty interesting, too, for a young fighter.
Yeah, I first I'll go with the, you know, Ortiz and Kavalauskas. I do think there's some interest in that, you know, when a lot of times in these step-up fights, quote-unquote step-up fights, what's annoying as a fan is, you know, the promoters are pretty careful to pick opponents that don't have power. I mean, Kavalauskas does have power. That's what I like at least about this fight. You know, I feel confident Ortiz is going to win it, but at least he's got power. But I was always lukewarm on Kavalauskas, and where I kind of where I kind of went from lukewarm to getting a little more down on him was, you know, when he had that draw with Ray Robinson. I mean, you know, he just, you know, you can have a bad night, but
yeah.
He's never impressed me that much before that. And he has some power, but kind of plodding, ordinary boxing skills, and never overly impressed me. Wasn't terrible, but never overly impressed me. But then when I saw the draw with Robinson, I watched that fight, and I was like, you know, the guy never impressed me that much, and you know, now he's fighting Robinson, who's just, you know, a more credible opponent, but really a guy really just always even outside the legit top 10, and, you know, he couldn't handle him. And then Crawford stopped him. It was a legit knockdown, I agree, but, you know, Crawford stepped it up and got him out of there. I agree, too. Ortiz has not looked as good to me the last couple fights, but, you know, he did have some decent opponents before that for what stage he was at, where he looked real good.
Right.
So I think he can recapture that. I mean, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't look quite as good. Yeah, some of these guys might just not be enough of a threat to him at this point. So, you know, maybe with Kavialaskis, because he has some power, that's gonna sharpen his game a little bit. I think Ortiz will stop him. I think this will be a good showcase for him, because I look at it as Kavialaskis is there to get hit, and Ortiz will hit him, and he'll hit him with power. So the part that's interesting is it's not like Ortiz is a defensive specialist. I mean, Kavialaskis does have some power. I mean, you know, it's possible Kavialaskis could get in a big shot, maybe shake up Ortiz a little before this thing's over. But I just think, you know, he's not going to be defensively elusive or anything like that. And Ortiz is, you know, pretty intense when he's looking for finishes, and I like that. And I think, you know, with Kavialaskis being a guy that's right there, he'll be able to get him out of there. And then the Maloney Franco, in the sense of odds, even though that's the third time they're fighting, you know, it's a tight one to me. The odds reflect it, and I agree. You know, it's like the Regan Diao and Casimiro, just in the sense that it's a tight one to call, and the odds reflect that. I do have, but on this one, I've got my theory figured out as to what I think is going to happen. It doesn't mean I'm going to be right. You know, Franco is an underdog at this point. He pulled the upset in the first fight. I did call that one. I thought he'd be able to repeat, and then we saw what happened, the controversy in the second fight. But I think, to some degree, I think the controversy in the second fight was a hair overblown. Because, I mean, let me just say this is where I saw it. You look at that replay. Yeah, people are saying they were pretty sure that wasn't from that butt. But when you looked at it, you couldn't tell 100%. And then here's the other part about it. Let's say if it wasn't from the butt, you know, we know what we've got, what's called the thumbless gloves, but there's still a thumb part that can, you know, get into the eye, and they don't call it. So, and you know, apparently that's the rule book now. So what I'm saying is if that wasn't from that butt, I mean, Maloney stuck part of a thumb in his eye when he was jabbing him. And he was jabbing him good. Let me not take anything away from Maloney. But it was extremely early. So what I'm just sort of saying here is, let's say you're a Maloney fan watching that. I mean, you're really advocating that, because just at the outset of the fight, he got a part of a thumb of the glove into Franco's eye and messed it up bad. You know, that's not I know they wanted him to get the TKO, but that wasn't a conclusive dominant performance or anything. I mean, yeah, there probably would have been no rematch then, because Aram wants to, you know, market Maloney. He's got him. I mean, you know, Franco's with Golden Boy. So, you know, this is the only reason we're getting a rematch, is the controversial ending. But I'm just saying, you know, there wouldn't have been a rematch, but to me, that wouldn't have been all that decisive. I mean, I know you win by a TKO if a punch is in the eye, even if it's the first round. I get that. But in terms of performance, it wasn't that decisive. I mean, I thought Maloney had a really good game plan that he exercised early. He was just, you know, he wanted to work the jab heavy this time. And it looked like Franco wasn't quite prepared for that. And he was taking a lot in the eye. And then, you know, either the butt or that partial thumb, it looked like, caused that eye injury. But what I'm saying is that I don't think that that would have lasted. I mean, it was so early. And I was just looking at one or two punches, but it was intending on being aggressive. He basically had Maloney about out of there in the first fight. And it looked to me like a couple of shots with the right hand that Franco did land in that very, very brief time in that fight. I thought they looked like they were getting to Maloney a little bit. So what I'm going to go on here is I think Maloney, understandably, and if I were him, I would too, he's going to come in with a game plan that he's just going to work that jab, throw a couple of body shots here and there, but mainly just be working that jab, and he's just going to try to box his way to a 12-round decision. And I think Franco is going to just be trying to fight like he did the first fight, but he's got Robert Garcia in his corner, a good corner man, and I think they'll just make the adjustment that, look, we know this guy's going to come out and try to jab us. So I think if the eye's okay and he can withstand that jabbing from Maloney and, you know, to last enough rounds, I think he'll get to him and he'll start battering him again or maybe even stop him late. He's the underdog, so I'm going with the underdog on that one. But that's the way I see it. I just thought that was a pretty good game plan by Maloney, but my gut watching those first few rounds in that fight was that it was one of those types of things, like, you know, when you watch a fight where you're like, yeah, this is pretty good, but he's not going to be able to do this for 12. That's the way I saw it. That's the way I saw it. But now Franco's eye was a mess, a real bad mess, and it hasn't been that long ago. So, you know, that eye's going to have to hold up. So, you know, I suppose there's a scenario that Maloney going with that game plan again could bust him up and Franco can't get to him. But I think they'll be ready for that, and I think he'll be able to start battering Maloney around by the second half of the fight and get the upset win in this one. So that's the way I see that one going. And then on the other fight, Gary Antonio Russell, I think Emmanuel Rodriguez, he got robbed in his last fight. I agreed that was a robbery, but he definitely did more, and I thought he got robbed. And he got blown out by Inoue. And even though it's Inoue, people don't want to hear this stuff with some of these guys that they're favorites. And look, Inoue is an excellent fighter, but you know, I'm not sure some of these victories are going to age all that well. Now, the Donaire one, you know, is aging better because he just came up with the big win. But he's still 38 years old. I mean, you know, that doesn't change, you know. So that's a 38-year-old guy. But, you know, these guys like Payano and Rodriguez, you know, Jamie McDonald's retired. You know, it's like you're not allowed to talk about this stuff within a way. But it is a reality. So what I'm just saying here is I think – look out for a guy like Gary Antonio Russell, because these are ones to me that become good ones to pick when you want to put a little money down too. Like, in other words, I'm not saying Gary Antonio Russell is necessary in a way, but Gary Antonio Russell is a damn good fighter, and all the Russells, they've got the pedigree there, the family genes and training, they're all good. And I think this might very well be a showcase for him where he just batters Rodriguez and gets him out of there. So I think look out for Gary Antonio Russell. To me, this is a really good showcase opportunity, and I think he's going to take advantage of it in this one. And just like his brother, Gary Antoine Russell, you know him at around 140, 147, I think he's the same type of guy. I mean, nobody wants to get in with these guys. I mean, if these guys are given the opportunity, they say, oh, who they fought, you give these guys the opportunity, and I think you're going to see.
They got a different style than their older brother too. They're trying to get you to the body. They're trying to come to you. You know.
Yeah, very. I know it's really funny, and the same dad trains them, but yeah, different styles. And these dudes are aggressive, and they've got power, and they're coming after you, like you said. And I think that both of them, I think whoever, you know, almost anybody that they can get in with outside of the very top, I think these guys are going to shine, and that's why I'm looking forward to here, because I want people to take notice. And I think that at least Rodriguez, being a guy who's been in with Inoue, that when Russell does to him what I think he's going to do to him, I think people will take notice. And I think another one, even though he's coming off a disappointing draw in his last fight and a loss before that, I'll just throw in there because I think it's worthy of note. I think Joshua Greer is set up pretty well for the upset possibility. You know, against Maloney at bantamweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Andrew Maloney. I think, you know, he got blown out by Inoue in his last fight. He has lost to Rodriguez. You know, Greer has had some disappointment recently, but I think since Top, you know, when you saw him on Showbox and then getting signed by Top Rank, you know, I think this guy wants to be a star. He wants to shine. Not that everybody doesn't, but I think this guy really wants it. I just think he's been looking for the opportunity. It was rumored a while back he was going to fight Maloney, and then they ended up fighting other people. So, you know, this fight's been on Greer's radar screen for a long time. It's the one he wanted. He's got to fight his best, obviously. But I think there's a good chance that he pulls the upset Saturday night if you're looking for an upset pick. I mean, I'm not going to guarantee it, but I think that's one to look at, because if you look at the record, expecting this, I was looking at the record of the Rodriguez guy he fought with that disappointing draw last fight. And if you look deep into that guy's record, you know, he's like 11-5, but it's one of those guys, if you look who he's fought, not so many big names, but a lot of undefeated guys, you know, a lot of close decision losses, that type of a guy. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, this guy's really, really, he truly is one of those guys that's better than his record looked. And the plenty of fight that he lost, he got off to a terrible start, but he came on real strong at the end. You know, that's one of those fights that, you know, it's his own fault, but, you know, if there would have been five more rounds tacked onto it, it might have turned out differently. Now, that's Joshua Greer's fault, but it had to look. So that's why I'm thinking there might be some upset possibility in the making here. It'll be tough for Greer, but I think he's got the capability of the upset here if he rises to the occasion. And I'm expecting he will, just because I think this is a fight that he's had on his radar screen for a couple of years.
I'm with you there. You have yourself a good night. Take it easy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Chris, have a good time with Mom, and Mom time definitely goes over WBA time. We can never forget that.
All right, you take it easy. Have a good one.
All right, take care, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. And by the way, they have officially ordered that fight. The news just came through. No surprise there. Real quick, just to end the show, not much time. You know, I think Franco at plus 160, plus 150, plus 170 is worth it. Definitely Rigo. Casamayor, you know, has that awkward style. Like I said, he can bounce on the outside. Other times he's charging forward. I think it'll be a slow start, though, much like that Tay-Tay fight. I think it'll be a slow start. And Casamayor, if he wants to win this fight, he's going to have to avoid headhunting in that one shot. You know, he has these combinations that, they're combination punches. He'll throw four, five, six punches, but it's still like a one shot at a time. Okay, boom, load up on one shot. Boom, load up on one shot. Sometimes he overdoes it, and next thing you know, he's in a bad position defensively and offensively in a sense. So he does have active footwork, fast and all that, but I'm going to go Rigo. I think he's more offensive-minded now. I think the accuracy and the intelligence will be actually what's going to win the fight. Could he grow old overnight? Sure. But he's engaged more, not just in general, but on the inside, you know, not relying on his legs as much. I think the timing and the counter-punching of Rigo is going to come through. I got him beating Casamayor, but when he's on his angles offensively and defensively, Casamayor, I really like him. You know, he does have his hands down too much. You know, so sometimes he's wide open on defense. Like I said, he loves to throw combos, but they're this one punch load up at a time, which I think will get him in trouble. So look for kind of an exchange or counter shot where Rigo just wakes his ass up, whether that's, I'm not saying he's going to knock him out, but I do think he'll get it. Virgil Ortiz will win. I actually think he'll TKO stop Mean Machine. I got Franco. Gutierrez Alvarado is another fight. I got Russell. It's literally about to cut me off here. So I'm going to get out of here. We'll be back next week. Peace.